Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In just a moment, one of our favorite topics, and that is space. We'll talk about satellites colliding and what the heck was this thing over the Texas skies. And the news, you find this fascinating. I love this news every time I hear it, about all of these Earths that exist in different galaxies. Whoa! It's a big topic. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. It is our winter membership drive, and I'm here to ask for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So make your pledge of support at WPR.org or call toll-free, and that number is 888-202-2552. Thanks to all of you who are pledging today. Cheryl Gasser, our talk director, is joining me in our Milwaukee studios. Hello again, Cheryl.
Hello, Kathleen. Hi. So glad to be here. We have a goal this hour, $5,000. I almost said $10,000. $5,000. Make it 10.
Oh, yeah, $10,000.
$5,000 to raise in support of Wisconsin Public Radio and everything you hear on The Kathleen Dunn Show and everything else, the NPR News. It's so worth your support. But we're asking you to put a price on it. There's no minimum, no maximum. Meeting these hourly goals helps us to reach the overall goal, helps us to keep the programming on the air, the quality of guests, the caliber of guests, the wonderful diversity of programming. So your contribution at $60 a month, $60 a year, $120 a year, break it up however you like, any amount you choose helps to get us there. So make your pledge now online. It's quick and easy. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in just a minute, Cheryl, we're talking to Rich Talcott, who's a semi-regular guest with us. We like space topics, and our audience does as well. He's senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, which is published right here in Wisconsin, and always joins us when there's big news from space. So we've talked about Pluto and planets and Mars and the space program, whether there should be more money or not. Should we go back to the moon? I love these questions. And there are many of them this hour, the discovery of perhaps other Earths and other galaxies, those space satellites that collided last week, and what kind of problems the debris is causing, etc. So those kinds of programs we do, as well as politics, all kinds of things. If you like it, please contribute this hour and go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio members, just like you, provide important support for our daily work. We just simply could not do what we do without your support. So go to WPR.org, make your pledge, do it right now. You'll be surprised how easy it is, how quick it is. It's safe and secure. If you make your pledge with your credit card, that will put your contribution to work instantly to support the programming that you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. It's easy to listen to WPR, either on your radio or on your computer 24/7, and it's easy to support us as well with your contribution. Just go now to WPR.org or give a call at 888-202-2552.
And you can listen to WPR every day for years. I know that many of you have done just that. You don't get a bill from us. It's not like a phone bill, a utilities bill, a cable bill, no meter on your radio to record your monthly usage. We use the honor system here, so we count on you to really voluntarily make a pledge to pay for the listening that you do. You can do this at WPR.org, WPR.org, or 888-202-2552. Decide how much this station is worth to you, a dollar a week, perhaps. Think of all the conversations that are generated in your life from what you hear on this show. I think probably 90% of my life is. Oh, you know who I was talking to? We had this conversation and that conversation. And I hope it's not tedious, but I don't think it is. I think it's fascinating information. So you decide. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We know that you care about politics, but you also care about the planet and space and the world around you, the universe. And so this pledge drive, we wanted to do something special, extra special, to thank you for your support. And that's why we're offering the Wisconsin Public Radio reusable shopping bag for your pledge of support at WPR.org. It's
Very handsome.
It's a wonderful, it's a nice green earth color. It says Wisconsin Public Radio on it. You can show your pride, your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. And it folds up into its own neat little pouch. You can shove it in your glove box, keep it with you, and then you don't have to choose paper or plastic. You can use your WPR reusable shopping bag, yours for a web pledge of $35 a year or more, WPR.org. You'll be doing something good for Wisconsin Public Radio. and for yourself, and you'll be reminded of it every time you go shopping. So make your pledge now, $35 a year or more at WPR.org.
Now, there's the idea. Put it in your glove compartment. Because you have to remember where to put it so it's always in your car. You get $35, you get this bag, glove compartment.
You probably fit a dozen of them.
Too.
You could fit a few of them in your glove box, so $35 each. And, you know, who needs one shopping bag? I need at least three or four. So.
Right, exactly.
But this is great. You'll use
that
it
is
for
great.
Years to come. It's handsome and
that's
shows
great.
Your support of
it's
WPR.
I like this idea. And what's that for, $35?
$35 and a web pledge, WPR.org.
All right. And again, you can go to WPR.org, 888-202-2552. We have the universe to talk about right now. It's a fairly big topic, so I think we'll go there. Cheryl, thanks very much. And thanks to all of you who have pledged as well. We just can't do all of this without you. Rich Talcott is our guest now. Rich has been with us many times in the previous years. He is senior editor of Astronomy Magazine. And we have a lot to talk about with him. Those satellites that collided in space, this, I guess it's a meteor. Is it a meteor or a UFO that appeared over Texas? We'll talk about this latest news that came, I think, this week about Earths and other galaxies. I love this. I just love this stuff. And our on-air line is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Hi, Rich. Thanks so much for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Let's talk about the that communication satellite and the defunct Russian spacecraft about 490 miles above northern Siberia last week crashed into each other. Were you darn surprised this happened? How could this happen?
Well, surprise may not be the right word. It's one of those things where there's lots of things up there in space, and eventually a couple of them are going to collide. So in the sense that objects colliding in space is something that most people expected would happen at some point in the future, but it wasn't something that we knew that these two spacecraft were on a collision course and were going to collide.
Mm-hmm. How much stuff is up there? How many defunct satellites are there? I guess I'm also asking the other part of the question is, what are the possibilities there's so much stuff up there that we're going to have more of this kind of thing happen?
I'm sure that we will over the course of decades anyway. To give you an idea, up until this accident last week, there were about 13,000 pieces of space junk up there that were 4 inches or larger in diameter. Mm-hmm. And the reason 4 inches is important is because that's the size that which NASA tracks all the objects bigger than four inches across. So there were about 13,000 pieces up there. Of those, only about 900 are functioning satellites. So we're talking about well less than 10% of the larger objects up there are actually functioning still.
And the ones that crashed last week, all the stuff, the debris that came from that, where does it go? What does gravity do to that? What does being in space do to all of that? Where is it?
It's up there. Most of it, anyway, is fairly close to where the collision occurred, which was about 500 miles above the Earth's surface. Now, over time, that material tends to filter back down toward Earth because of drag from the outer layers of our atmosphere. So eventually that stuff is going to come out of Earth orbit and burn up on reentry into our atmosphere. But it'll take a long time. It turns out that at the altitude of about 500 miles or so, it can take decades for that material to come down through from the 500 kilometers up into our atmosphere.
So what we saw over Texas recently was not debris, as some initially thought it might be. It couldn't have been.
It doesn't seem like it would be, no. There are some of the particles that were created in this collision that were thrown into much more oval orbits around Earth, so they aren't all circling Earth necessarily. But it seems unlikely that a piece big enough to have caused what was seen over Texas would have come from this collision.
I know that the, and I don't know if they've already decided on this, the UN Subcommittee on Space, I didn't even know they had one, had a meeting in Vienna this week, and they were going to look at this issue of satellites in space and how to avoid this kind of debris, because it must create some concern for all the countries who are putting satellites up there. Don't you think, Rich, that to get your satellite up in space, you don't want it to be hit by a piece of this debris?
No, that's for sure. And it's not just countries up there, but communication satellite companies have satellites up there. In fact, the Iridium satellite, which was one of a working satellite that was destroyed last week in this collision, is a private company. So there are certainly private concerns as well as from the countries. The big concern I think everyone has is what it might mean to people on the International Space Station or when the space shuttle flies. And fortunately, those fly at a significantly lower altitude. They're usually at about 300 miles up, whereas the collision happened at about 500 miles up. So by the time stuff from this collision kind of filters down to that level, we should have a pretty good idea of where the bigger particles are that could do damage and take a look and try to avoid those things. It turns out that the space station itself gets moved every now and then because there's a chance that something might come close to it. I think the criteria NASA uses for moving either the space station or the space shuttle is if there's a better than 1 in 10,000 chance that a piece is going to come close enough to the spacecraft in order to cause a problem. And so anything greater than a 1 in 10,000 chance, they don't bother with. But if the odds look better than 1 in 10,000 that a collision might happen, they'll move the objects enough so that it won't cause a collision.
Mm-hmm. This has raised calls, as you know, Rich, for a better monitoring of the traffic, which will only grow in space, that we need international standards for companies and governments who are operating in space. Do we need such a thing?
It probably would make sense because although the Iridium satellite that was destroyed last week was a functioning satellite, most of the things up there aren't functioning anymore. And needless to say, lots of the countries that are involved in this, once the spacecraft are defunct, aren't all that interested in following them or doing that kind of thing. So the goal is to try to set up some system where you can, in the future, make sure that if those objects are up there, either they're brought back down to Earth, either the way NASA has brought down a few different satellites by purposely firing the rocket so that they'll burn up in Earth's atmosphere, or simply to vent all the fuel that may be left on board. There was a collision, actually, a rocket that blew up that was basically a fuel stage of a Russian rocket, and this was about 2 to 3 years ago, and it was mainly filled with fuel. And the reason it exploded is that something set it off, probably an electronic glitch or something like that. But if they had vented all the fuel out there, there wouldn't have been an explosion that happened. So there's a wide range of possibilities that people could do. One is to bring the satellites back into our atmosphere, and the other would be to get rid of any fuel that might be on board these things.
Mm-hmm. We had the vice chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the former head of the Military Space Operation Program, saying that we have to enhance space situational awareness, Rich, and that this could mean, not that we have any money for this right now, billions of dollars in high technology that the Defense Department would like to have.
And that probably would make sense. Right now, NASA tracks basically anything more than 4 inches across. And the reason that that's kind of the yardstick that they go by is because it's very difficult to track smaller objects, and it's very difficult to know the paths that these things are going to go on. It's kind of like imagining here on Earth, if you throw up a baseball into the air, you pretty much know what its trajectory is going to be. But if you throw a feather up into the air, you don't know what's going to happen to it. And that's the kind of thing that goes on with these objects that are smaller than 4 inches across, is that you just can't track where they're going to be in the future very well. And so the goal is to track the things bigger than 4 inches across, which you can track and follow over the course of many years. And NASA does a pretty good job with those. The statistics I gave you was about 13,000 pieces up there as of before the collision last week is pretty good and probably accounts for almost all of the objects that are bigger than 4 inches across. But there are lots and lots of things smaller than that that basically can only be tracked in small amounts by radar and things like that. And that's the kind of thing that it would be nice to be able to get a much better handle on.
Yeah. And how difficult would it be to get one of these satellites up there and to have a device on it, much like a car, except you'd be doing it from remote control in Texas or whatever? Uh-oh, something's in the way. Got to move the satellite.
That would be... Well, let's put it this way. If you know that a possible collision is going to come up, it is possible usually to move the satellite that's in danger. But to try to send something up into orbit that would actually be able to trap these particles as they're going around is essentially impossible, just because there are so many of them, for one thing, and secondly, because it takes so much fuel to go from each of these individual pieces. I don't think I told you the numbers, but they estimate that there are probably tens of millions of small particles. And by we're talking things that might not be bigger than a grain of sand up there that have happened, that have caused by things flaking off spacecraft or collisions with other things or explosions. And so there is just so many of these really small things up there that the odds of being able to go up and actually do anything about the small ones is essentially impossible.
Let's welcome phone calls for Rich. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Rich Talcott is the senior editor of Astronomy Magazine. We're talking, among other subjects, about the communication satellite that collided with the Russian spacecraft above northern Siberia, way up 490 miles above Siberia. And it begs the question, what else is in space? What are the possibility of future collisions? What kind of risk does it pose for the space station, for satellites being launched? Do we need to figure out some way as a planet to deal with this? We'll also talk about that meteor. We'll talk about the possibility of Earths in other galaxies, many other Earths in other galaxies, and whatever you'd like to discuss when it comes to the latest news from space. Rich is on the topic. 800-486-8655 is the number. And just a reminder, we're in a pledge drive. It's our all-important winter pledge drive. We do have a goal of $5,000 for this hour, and we'd like very much for you to pledge. If you can pledge, why don't we do this $35 and push that this hour? If we got a lot of you to pledge at $35, you get this, which is important considering our topic, this environmentally friendly, reusable shopping bag that you can use when, and it says Wisconsin Public Radio on it. It's kind of a neat thing to take with you when you go shopping. So a $35 pledge will get you that. And that number for your pledge, thank you very much, is 888-202-2552, 888-202-2552, or you can go to WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls now for Rich, and we start with Lou from Milwaukee. Hi, Lou.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
I have actually a parallel between what's going on now in space and all the garbage that was dumped off in New York in the past, and nature rebuilt and put it back where it came from. But I'm wondering whether the all the satellites potentially could be in danger of becoming non-functional as a result of this garbage.
I would think the odds of all of them becoming non-functional because of this stuff that's up there is pretty slim. Like I said, a lot of the things that are up there right now are in lower orbit than where this collision took place. And they're, I don't want to say totally safe, but they're in pretty good shape. And a lot of the most important satellites, at least from what our society is involved with now in terms of communications and things like that, are actually much, much higher up. There's something called geosynchronous orbit, which is 22,000 approximately miles above Earth's surface. So we're talking about something that's 50 times farther out than where these collisions occurred. And that's where a lot of the communication satellites and the weather satellites exist, because they can look down on the same spot at Earth all the time. And so the number of objects that are up there is pretty small, and there's essentially hasn't been any collisions up there. So the amount of space debris that you find way up there in geosynchronous orbit is pretty much nil. And so I think those satellites certainly are going to be safe for a very long period of time.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lou, for the call. Kurt is next from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Kurt.
Yeah, an observation, then a question. The observation first. It seems we might be running the risk with what appears to be the enormity of the space envelope around the planet, that it's so big it can absorb any refuse and debris. We used to think the same about our streams and lakes and oceans, and we've realized that they do have a limit as to what they can absorb. The question has to do with the both solid and liquid fuel, especially with the liquid fuel or the solid. when that is dispersed out into space, obviously there's no evaporation out there, what happens to it? Does liquid fuel form little bubbles and just spin around as frozen fuel forever, or what?
Yeah, the liquid fuel does basically freeze up there because the temperatures are quite cold, and so you have little small globules of frozen pieces up there. Most of those are pretty small, and so they would be well under the 4-inch diameter that I was talking about before. Most of those would probably be on the order of a tenth of an inch or so across. And so they don't pose much threat to most satellites. For instance, the International Space Station is guarded from objects that are that small by fairly heavy shielding. And so things like that where humans are involved up in space, those are pretty well protected by the really small stuff like you'd get from the frozen liquid fuel.
Okay,
Kurt. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join the conversation with Rich Talcott. He's senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, and our phone number is 800-486-8655. Let me say that again. I think I mangled it. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation, and we'd like very much to hear from you. Rich, let's talk about this fireball that blazed across the Texas sky. I guess they got tons of calls over the weekend to police agencies. What in the world was it? Do we know?
It was probably some piece of rock that came to us from interplanetary space and just happened to fall within a week of when the collision of the satellites happened. And so a lot of people initially jumped to the conclusion that it was probably a piece of that. But actually, there are lots of debris up there. And by debris here, I mean debris that comes about because objects in the solar system run into each other occasionally. We're talking asteroids and things like that that lie out between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. They've occasionally run into each other as well, just like pieces of debris in Earth's orbit. And when these pieces collide, they eventually get sent onto orbits that sometimes intersect Earth. And when they do, we can get these very bright things in the sky. The one over Texas was probably about the size of a car or so when it came into Earth's atmosphere, and the friction with the air burned it up in the atmosphere before it could reach Earth's surface.
It was so bright, wasn't it? I saw the picture of it, and I think it was happening during the daytime as well, and it just lit up the sky.
Yeah, it was extremely bright. There was another one that occurred up in Canada last year, out in Alberta, that actually a couple of friends of mine actually saw from while they were out observing, and it happened at night. And you can imagine something that bright at night really lit up the landscape from that. And they actually found several pieces from that rock that fell to Earth up in Canada.
Huh. And what about the one that fell from Texas? Will there be pieces of that discovered somewhere, I would think?
It's possible that it will be. From what I've heard so far, no one has found anything, and people usually tend to go out and take a look for these things. But I haven't heard yet that anyone has found pieces from this.
Well, we need to go take a journey.
Sounds good.
See what's out there. Another piece of news which I find absolutely fascinating, this is we found on the BBC News. The galaxy has billions of Earths. Dr. Alan Boss of the Carnegie Institution of Science saying that many of these worlds could be inhabited by simple life forms. He's at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. He says that each sun-like star has on average one Earth-like planet. And this means there would be huge numbers capable of supporting life. I love this comment. Not only are they probably habitable, but they are probably also going to be inhabited. I think that most likely the nearby Earths are going to be inhabited with things which are perhaps more common to what Earth was like 3 or 4 billion years ago. What do you think about that?
I think the odds are pretty good that what he's saying is true, but I'm also slightly skeptical, and my skepticism comes about because most of the time when people talk about the possibility of things being inhabited, they're basing it off of the one example that we have, which is here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And as any statistician will tell you, a sample of one is not very good to try to start extrapolating out into the galaxy, into much bigger samples. Now, there's a good there's a good point to be made. One is that over the last decade or so, we've started to find lots and lots of planets around other stars in the sun's vicinity. And the count now is up to between 300 and 400. So the numbers are going up pretty significantly. That's only in the last decade that we found these planets. Most of them so far are not like the ones we find in our solar system, where we have small rocky objects near our star and big gas giants like Jupiter and Saturn that are farther away. Because of the techniques they use to find these planets, it's much easier to find big planets in close to the stars. And so most of the ones that they've discovered so far are Jupiter size, but more in orbits like Mercury, Venus, and Earth here in our solar system. So we haven't really found very many, in fact, we haven't found any that you could call similar to Earth yet, or similar to our solar system, where you have rocky planets in close to their stars in what would be called the habitable zone. And the habitable zone is simply a region around a star where liquid water could exist on its surface. So even saying that there could be billions of Earths in our galaxy, we're still basically extrapolating from the one example we have here. We haven't yet found a solar system that matches what ours looks like. Now, the other point to make here is that almost all astronomers expect that eventually we will find these things, because the technology for finding planets our size, it takes a little while to be able to find these small objects around stars. It's a lot easier to find big ones. And so I think eventually we'll find lots and lots of Earths around other stars, and then we can start doing some statistical analysis and with real numbers, as opposed to just kind of hypothetically saying it's probably like this.
Eventually, meaning what, 5 years, next month, 10 years?
Well, next month is actually a good number. I don't want to say that we'll have answers in a month, but NASA's scheduled to launch a spacecraft called Kepler next month. So you must have been reading the advanced news about that.
No, Rich, I just pulled it out of the air.
Well, it was a good pull. Kepler is going to go up there, and what it does is it looks for, it's going to be looking at probably about 100,000 stars in a certain direction in the sky, and looking for the telltale darkening of those stars as a planet passes in front of it. You can imagine if you're observing, in fact, you can do that here on Earth. Back in 2004, the planet Venus passed between Earth and the Sun, and you could see the dark dots of Venus crossing in front of our star. Kepler is basically going to be watching about 100,000 stars, looking for that same kind of thing where the star's brightness will dim slightly as a planet passes in front of it. And it's really the first spacecraft that we'll have that'll be capable of detecting Earth-sized planets around other stars.
Oh, my.
Now, by saying that it can detect these things, it doesn't mean that as soon as it goes up next month, it's going to find thousands of these things. It doesn't quite work that way. It's going to take years of data and analysis before they can finally figure out that, yes, there are these planets and they're in these kinds of orbits. But the answer may start to come to us within a month or two, and we probably should get better statistics within a few years from now.
Let's go to Peg from Rice Lake. Hi, Peg.
Hi there. I'm backing up to your earlier topic about space debris.
Sure.
But your screener said that was okay, I guess.
Of course, yeah.
I wanted to know how, he said they sometimes do move those satellites out of the way of an object about to collide. I'm saying, how do they do that? I thought it was all dependent on orbit and inertia up there, because there's nothing to propel against.
Actually, you don't need something to propel against to move. All of these satellites that are up there have little small thrusters on them so that they can point in different directions. One example you're probably familiar with is the Hubble Space Telescope, which is up there. And it has to point at different spots in the sky to take pictures of different objects. And so you can imagine that there are a lot of these small thrusters that can move these satellites a small amount. And in terms of the space debris and a possible collision, you don't have to move the satellite very far to move it away from where the object is coming in. There's an example of one of the Earth observation satellites, and this happened back in 2006, I think, where there was something that looked like it was going to collide. They moved it about 9 feet in orbit. It just took a little bit of motion against with the thrusters to move it out of the way of that piece of debris, and so there wasn't any problem.
Huh. Peg, thanks so much for the call. Rich Talcott is our guest. He's been with us many times before as we talk about the latest news from space, including the collision of the satellites last week over Siberia. We are asking for your support of Wisconsin Public Radio right now as well, and your contribution makes the work that we do here to have people like Rich on the air and talk about these terrific otherworldly topics sometimes. Your contribution makes this work possible. All go online, WPR.org, or call 888-202-2552. Cheryl Gasser is joining me in our studios. Hello again, Cheryl.
Hi, Kathleen. We have a goal this hour, $5,000, and we have raised just about $1,000 toward that goal. So still a long way to go, but plenty of time left. In the hour, 22 minutes to raise $4,000. Every pledge makes a difference. Every contribution, no matter the level, is important in support of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR is listener-supported, and your pledge at any level helps to make this program possible. So contribute now. You can do it securely online at WPR.org or by giving us a call, 888-202-2552.
The people we have on the air here, you know this, Cheryl. I'm sure you hear it from guests. We have that they love coming on Wisconsin Public Radio. You would think it'd be hard to ask somebody for an hour of his or her time, mm-hmm. but yet people do this, and they know that you have a reputation, this audience, of being very smart, asking great questions. We will talk for almost a solid hour, which is unheard of in most media today, and so the guests come to us again and again. Your financial support makes this possible. Listener support, the most reliable portion of our funding, so we're thanking you in advance for making a pledge online at WPR.org or toll-free at 888-202-2552.
Maybe it's time for you to renew your pledge, or maybe you're a first-time member to Wisconsin Public Radio. Either way, we'd love to hear from you now because you pay for what you value. We're asking you to contribute to Wisconsin Public Radio now. So go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. You could make a pledge of a dollar or two a week or whatever amount is comfortable for you, a dollar a day perhaps. You'll be doing your part to help keep this station strong, keep these wonderful guests that Kathleen brings to you, the wonderful topics, Rhonda Fanning, Rob Schroeder, Carmen Jackson. And it's a great team, Kathleen on the air. 8 hours a week of wonderful programming. What is that worth to you? WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make your pledge now.
And, you know, I just mentioned those during a break at 9:20, those bags, Cheryl, and all of a sudden we got some pledges. I think those are a really great idea. So for $35, some of you can pledge $35. We all want to be using, instead of, as you said, plastic or paper. Oh, no, thank you. I have my own bag that says Wisconsin Public Radio on it. It is green, and it's good looking, and these are something that we need. As we're talking about cleaning up space, you know, seems to sort of dovetail into cleaning up the environment on Earth. So for $35 pledge, we're happy to send you one of them. I think it's a neat thing. 888-202-2552, or make it easier by going to WPR.org.
And it's so quick. It takes about 2-3 minutes of your time. You tell us your name. You give us some contact information that we will, of course, keep private. You let us know how much you'd like to contribute and how you'd like to pay for it. Credit cards save us time and money. We take Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover. So take those 3 minutes now. Invest those 3 minutes in Wisconsin Public Radio. Give securely online at WPR.org. And for a pledge of $35 a year or more, pick up one of those Wisconsin Public Radio reusable shopping bags to show your support.
We've had 8 callers this hour, Cheryl. We've had 3 new callers. That's great. And we're trying to get to $5,000. We're at $995 now, almost $1,000. So help us reach our goal by the end of the hour so we can keep giving you these great conversations. Thanks, Cheryl. I'll talk to you a little bit later. Rich Talcott is our guest, senior editor of Astronomy Magazine. We're talking about the latest news from space and welcoming phone calls. Forgot to thank you, Peg from Rice Lake, for your call. 800-486-8655 is the number for you to call to be on the air with us. 800-486-8655. Let's go back to what I inadvertently asked you. I didn't know that this was going to happen. These 100,000 items that will be observed will be cameras. How do you zero in on those that are important, Rich? This technology I find just amazing.
Oh, the Kepler satellite?
Yeah.
Basically, what it's going to do is it's going to have one camera, and it's going to be staring at the same spot in the sky for probably a few years at a time. And so what it's going to do is take pictures, and it's in a region of the sky where there are lots of stars. It's in the constellation Cygnus, which some of your listeners may know, lies right along the main path of the Milky Way through the sky. And because of that, there's tons of stars out there. So it's just going to open up its camera, keep it pointed in the same direction, and then basically take all the images that it takes and send it back to Earth, where computers and smart people analyze all the data, looking for the stars that periodically dim because a planet is passing in front of it.
Hmm. And what about smart people? One of the things that we frequently talk about is getting young people involved in the study of science. I keep saying this on the air, but it seems to me, Rich, as though people in this field, people like you, do this extraordinary work that's so important to everybody, and it should be front page news, and frequently it isn't. You have to dig to find it. So what do you need? Good PR? What do you need?
Well, good PR is always helpful. I think not just nowadays, but in most times, things that affect people's lives most intimately, and by that it's usually money concerns, which we certainly have enough of in this country right at the moment, those tend to push out the science results that are coming out. We have NASA and the European Space Agency in particular have spacecraft that are exploring several planets at the moment. But usually those kinds of things take a while for people to analyze and figure out what's going on. And then they'll do a paper in a research journal or do a press conference and talk about it. And usually that comes quite a bit of time after the observations themselves were made. So there's not kind of the immediacy that you get with a lot of the news that a plane crashes or the economy or the stock market goes up or down. And those kinds of things happen almost in real time. And so they almost fit the definition of news. Whereas science usually tends to be a little bit more slow and methodical. And so it takes a little bit more effort to get it into the public consciousness of something that's going on right at the moment.
Rich Talcott is our guest, this our senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Rich Talcott, senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, is our guest. We go to Kevin next from Heartland. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Three questions real quick. Are meteors radioactive? Should you be careful if you happen to find one? The second question, are they worth money if you find one? And the third question, how can you tell if it's a meteor, if it came from space, if it isn't just a regular rock? Okay, and I'll hang up. I'll take my answer off.
Okay. Do you think you found one, Kevin? Is that?
No, I wish. I always...
You might.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Now, that's a good question, actually. Actually, you don't need to worry about radioactivity from meteorites. They're basically made out of the same kind of stuff as rocks here on Earth are. So it's not that they have any more radioactivity than a normal rock that you might see along the side of the road would have. So that's not a concern at all. As to whether they're worth any money, some of them are actually, because as you might figure out, some rocks here on Earth, like those with diamonds in them, are worth a lot more than rocks without diamonds in them. And meteorites are similar, not in the sense that they have diamonds in them, but some of them are very rare and some of them are fairly common. And the common ones don't tend to be worth too much, but the rare ones, people can spend thousands of dollars for little small pieces of these kinds of things. So some of them can be worth quite a bit. It's much more difficult to tell if you've got a meteorite as opposed to something else or just a normal rock, typically the meteorites that are found on Earth tend to be denser than normal rocks because to survive the passage through Earth's atmosphere, they have to be put together pretty solidly. But that's not something that a typical person walking along the street is going to pick something up and say, this feels pretty heavy, it is a meteorite. Usually they have to be analyzed, and by analyzed you can figure out object, and usually there's enough of a difference between Earth rocks and ones from space that scientists can tell from that.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. We go next to Mark from Green Bay. Hi, Mark.
Oh, hi. Thanks a lot for the opportunity. I'm sure you're familiar with exoplanets called hot Jupiters that orbit really close to their nearest star. I'm wondering if it's possible to have a planet that could orbit. Like an orb that would be really close to the hard center of Jupiter zipping around there without us knowing it?
That's a good question. Probably not, in that sense, all of the Jupiters that have been found so far. And I'll just back up a little bit to talk about that. I mentioned that it's a lot easier to find big planets in orbit than stars that are fairly close. And a lot of the planets that we've discovered so far are these things about the size of Jupiter that may orbit actually within a few days around their star. So they may well be inside the orbits of Mercury if they were in our solar system. These hot Jupiters tend to be very close to their stars, but it doesn't seem very likely that you could have a moon, say, going around one of these gas giant planets that would actually be inside the disk of the planet itself, just like you wouldn't expect to have a planet even like Mercury or a larger one that could actually orbit inside the sun, because basically the object would eventually burn up from friction, just like meteors do in Earth's atmosphere.
Hmm. Would you see a wobble in its orbit if there were something inside orbit?
You would see a wobble in its orbit if there was something moving around, yes. So you would be able to tell by looking at an object if there's something else moving around it, and then you'd have to figure out exactly how far away it is and whether it was inside the cloud tops or not.
Thank you so much for your call. Fred is next from, where are you from, Fred?
Orland Park, Illinois.
All right,
it's
Fred.
25 miles southwest of Chicago.
Oh, great. Okay. Glad you can pick us up down there. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, I had bought stock in Iridium. It was a Motorola stock. And I paid about $80 a share for it, and I was attracted to it because of the Steven Spielberg dinosaur movies, and, you know, they were always using it to contact their home base on the remote islands. And I thought it was pretty neat, so I bought the stock. And then they found out that the satellite phones don't work unless there's a clear line of sight to the satellite. In other words, office people couldn't use them in the buildings. And the stock really tumbled, and Motorola wanted to dump it. In fact, they were going to take the satellites out of the constellation, but the Department of Defense took them over. And I guess they came in handy in remote places like Afghanistan and Iraq. And my question is there an insurance policy on that satellite that got wrecked? And could they, like, reimburse some of us stockholders that now have 8 cents a share of stocks?
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Rich, you never thought that question was coming.
No, I guess I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for any insurance money from this. A lot of the commercial satellites that are up in orbit do have insurance policies on them. So if something does happen, and more often than not, it's does the satellite actually make it up into orbit and function? And if it doesn't, then they'll get some insurance money from it. But that's usually what the insurance is for, not for something like the space collision.
Huh. Interesting question. I just have one question for you. Forgive me if this is terribly ignorant, but we didn't know at my family. We talk about space issues a lot at the dinner table, and frequently the subject of the moon has come up. And so I'm going to ask you about the moon. Why isn't there much going on the moon? It's about as far away from the sun as we are. Why don't we have more life stuff going on the moon?
Oh, well, that's a good question and a fairly simple one to answer. And it basically has to do with its size. It happens to be about a quarter the size of Earth.
Uh-huh.
And the smaller an object is, the the harder it is for it to hold on to an atmosphere. And so Earth is big enough that we can hold on to our atmosphere. The moon is too small so that if it had any atmosphere, it would almost immediately fly off into space. So you've eliminated the possibility of an atmosphere around an object like that. Another problem that you have is that small bodies like the moon tend to lose their internal heat pretty quickly because they don't have as many radioactive elements, say, as we have in Earth's core. And so none of that kind of regeneration that we have here on Earth with material welling up through volcanoes and things like that to keep the Earth's surface in constant motion is happening on the moon. So the moon basically got cold and died fairly early on in its history and doesn't really have the kind of atmosphere that would allow anything to develop on there.
Wait till I bring this up at the dinner table. They're going to think I'm really smart. I can't believe I haven't found out the answer in all these years. Thanks, Rich, so much for being with us. It was really interesting. It always is.
Good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rich Talcott, senior editor of Astronomy Magazine, to talk about what's going on in space. Cheryl Gasser is joining me in our studios. We're in a winter pledge drive right now, and we have a goal of $5,000. Well, you know, we're getting there. We're at $1,640. I think we can get there by 10 o'clock. Hello again, Cheryl.
Hello, Kathleen. We absolutely can get there. We've got 8 minutes left in the hour and plenty of ways for you to pledge. You can go online, WPR.org, and pledge. It's quick, easy, safe, and secure. I just renewed my pledge, Kathleen. I did it that way. It took me less than 3 minutes.
All right. Right.
So, you know, I'm a renewing member of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's time for you to renew with this winter membership drive. Go to your computer, WPR.org, or go online. Call 888-202-2552 on the telephone. Either way, it takes 2-3 minutes. You let us know who you are, how much you'd like to contribute, and how you'd like to pay for it. Help us to reach that goal, $5,000 for the hour, in support of everything you hear on Kathleen's program, from politics to Pluto. She covers it all. What is that worth to you? Make up your mind and make that pledge. Let's hear from you now.
And we're trying. I think this bag thing is working well. $35, it is, you know, if you can pledge $60, we'll give you a couple of these bags so you can go shopping and be green about your shopping, because you always hate to take a plastic, and sometimes we forget, take a plastic bag or a paper bag. This one you're not going to forget, and it has Wisconsin Public Radio on it, and it's really nice. So it's called a Chico bag, $35 pledge. So just get a ton of people pledging for at least $35 or more, and we'll be happy to send this to you. 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552. We've had all kinds of people send us messages, and I'll read some of them, just one right now, though. But this one, people don't say this about many things in life. Cheryl, Richard from Waukesha, it is practically my lifeblood. My life wouldn't be as good without it. What a statement about radio. It's just wonderful.
And you, Kathleen. I mean, Wisconsin Public Radio is wonderful. You are a host like no other. And that's what people are pledging for. They're supporting Wisconsin Public Radio because of the wonderful topics, the guests, and the hosts, just like you. You do a great job. I think you've got one of the best jobs in the universe. But you do it so well. You hear your passion every day. And that's why we come to you a few times a year, because quite honestly, listener support is about a third of our budget. And this is the most effective way to raise money in support of Wisconsin Public Radio, is to come on the air and ask you to support what you enjoy day in and day out. So put a price on it. Maybe it's $35 for the Wisconsin Public Radio reusable shopping bag. If you want that, pledge on the web at WPR.org and save paperwork as well. It takes just a few minutes either way. And if you'd like to talk to someone and have them walk you through your pledge, it's 888-202-2552. But don't delay. Make the pledge now.
You really count on us, Cheryl, for accurate information. You know that we do our homework. We really do. I read the books, most of them. Rhonda Fanning, Carmen Jackson, in touch with people in the world to get you the best guest. Rob Schroeder, too. John Treader does volunteer work for us. It's really a group of committed people, and it is one of the better jobs in the world. Cheryl's right. I'll admit it. So make a contribution right now and join others who invest in these programs. You can do it online at WPR.org or toll free at 888-202-2552.
We have heard from 18 members this hour so far, 7 brand new members to Wisconsin Public Radio. So welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio family, and thank you for your support. A pledge at any level makes you a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, whether it's $35 for the shopping bag or consider a contribution of $1,000. Your $1,000 contribution will play a major role in supporting the station and making it available to everyone who wants to listen. So perhaps make a pledge for those who can't in this difficult economy. You can put your pledge on a credit card. You can even pay your $1,000 pledge in monthly installments. Break it down monthly, $83 a month. Think about it, Kathleen. Cable, newspaper subscription.
Exactly, right,
Cheryl. $83 a month. What right. A bargain for everything you get from Wisconsin Public Radio, for everything you learn. So go online now, WPR.org, or call us, 888-202-2552. Pledge of any amount is appreciated.
Prairie du Chien caller, WPR, has thought-provoking discussions about varied topics. I like the interviews and the questions that people call in. Many times, callers' questions mirror my own, which is true. Steve from Ripon, I love it. Chris from Green Bay, I recently rediscovered WPR and love the intelligent and interesting topics discussed through the day. Elaine and Victor from Minocqua, we listen to WPR daily. I can't imagine life without WPR. Mm-hmm. The quality of information of programming and the accolades just go on and on, but it is true. It's a terrific service. Please call with your support. Our pledge number is 888-202-2552 or WPR.org, our web.
And at the end of the hour, Kathleen, I love it when I hear the guests say, and this happens often on your show, thank you for your great listeners. You have the most intelligent listeners in the public radio universe, mm-hmm. and we really do. And it's due in part to the programming that we provide, the wonderful shows that you do, the great job you do hosting. I learn so much from listening to your show every day. You're going to learn something new every time you turn on Wisconsin Public Radio. And what is that worth to you? We thank our guests for volunteering their time. We thank you, listeners, for contributing your comments, your emails, your questions. And we're asking you now to support us financially, be it $30 a month, be it $30 a year. The important thing is that you become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are special listeners, and we want you to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. 888-202-2552 or WPR.org.
Well, Donovan from Huntsville, Alabama is on line one wanting to pledge from. He is a regular listener who thinks WPR is the best. Huntsville, Alabama, here's to you. Cheryl, thanks very much. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to John Trutter for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and to all of your great calls for Rich Talbot. Thanks to him for talking about space. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Be with you again on Monday at 9 for All Things Political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.